Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, new rules when the parks reopen, dining location and menu updates, more mobile ordering locations.
Where to grab a great hotel deal, lightsabers might cost more, we talk to a friend of Mickey from Fantasmic, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of April 21st, 2021. I'm Tig Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Annalisa H. for supporting the show, and also to Will R. for increasing your support of DL Weekly. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our supporter Discord chat has been a wonderful source of Disney magic from our supporters. Like right now, actually, we have a bounding theme week going on. Today is Toon Tuesday, and I think tomorrow is Walt Wednesday, but I could be wrong.
I should have worn my
thing tomorrow. I've been very bad about trying to pre-plan. I kind of have been throwing my bounds together last minute.
Tomorrow is Walt Wednesday, then Throwback Thursday, Fantasyland Friday, and Square Saturday for New Orleans Square.
I do already have an idea for Fantasyland Friday, though.
So I feel like you should have something for New Orleans Square, no?
Maybe. I haven't put too much thought into it yet. But anyways, if you would like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
So we have a D180 this week, which is great, but it's going to be interesting because it's not the voice of DL Weekly this time.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Renfro with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180 we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds, so let's jump right in. In the D180, we of course normally skip over Disneyland, but I'd be remiss if I didn't add a note of excitement for this past week as well. In a Disney travel universe focused primarily on Disney World for the past 8 months, mainly because there's not anything else to focus on, we culminate this long-anticipated week with a mass Disneyland rush. The excitement is real, as many people now finally have active Disneyland tickets and park reservations to go with them, which is just beyond exciting. So while I personally broke my record for longest Disney wait time on the 15th, with a call lasting somewhere around 8.5 hours, it was still amazing fun to be working with Walt's original park again. So congratulations to everyone who booked up for the reopening. It's going to be a joyful reunion. Now let's head over to where we always start and talk Walt Disney World. As my friend Eric Johnson mentioned on the last D180 episode, preparations for the 50th anniversary are still well underway. But there is plenty of excitement to enjoy prior to those festivities, which will kick off on October 1st. One great experience that was just announced is the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. This not-to-be-missed event is perfect for ladies' weekend, a getaway with the guys, a romantic retreat with your special someone, or even a cultural experience for the entire family. Slated to start earlier than normal this year, most likely due to the anniversary, we're seeing the festival kick off on July 15th, which is just a few short weeks away. So don't hesitate. Get out there and enjoy a few of the highlights like Emile's Fromage Montage, which is a global kind of experience with cheese. They're bringing back Remy's Ratatouille Hide and Seek, which is a wonderful scavenger hunt. All new souvenirs to take home, spirit jerseys, baseball caps, and more. And don't forget to listen to some of your favorite music that'll be performed by Voices of Liberty and, of course, the Jammin' Chefs. Now let's move across the pond and take a look at Adventures by Disney, who just announced bookings have started for 2022. And a special $500 savings per person will be available to those who book select Adventures before the 15th of July. With more than 24 destinations on 6 continents, there'll be no shortage of options available for your family in 2022. And this year, Italy is high on our list. Travel through the old world country, steep in rich traditions and glorious history, while you immerse yourself in the timelessness of its remarkable culture. The best thing about this new adventure is it provides a private guide for your family at each of your destinations, which will include Rome, Florence, and Venice. Whether you're making pasta while tasting wine on a Tuscan farm, or creating your own Carnevale mask with the help of skilled artisans and a Venetian local shop, this is truly going to be a trip to remember. Lastly, we finish off on the island of Oahu at Disney's Aulani Resort and Spa, where we're excited to hear that Character Breakfast is returning to the Makahiki restaurant on May 7th. While there will be some adjustments to the experience for health and safety of the guests and cast, the experience is sure to offer great times for fans of Mickey Mouse and his friends. Some songs and entertainment will be provided as the whole gang joins Auntie and Uncle for this delicious three-course breakfast. Entree options will include the macadamia nut pancakes with Tahitian vanilla sauce or the Hawaiian-style locomoco with hamburger steak, all accompanied by pastries and fresh seasonal fruit. And of course, for your younger guests, an optional Belgian Mickey waffle or a red velvet mini waffle is sure to bring a smile to their face. In the end, it's wonderful to see character interactions back at Aulani, and breakfast at Makahiki is the perfect way to kick off your island morning. Well, that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over and visit the Facebook pages and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, Concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and your family. I'm Mike Renfro, and this has been your D180.
Now let's get to the news.
Some of the rules at the parks will be updated when they reopen. Most notably, Disney reserves the right to request a guest leave if they are not wearing an approved face covering, violating any of the existing park rules, or for using profanity or offensive language towards cast members or other guests. This is in response to the guests that have caused some altercations in Walt Disney World upon its reopening. This also made me think about the incident that we had in Toontown not too long ago at Disneyland, and how that may have played a part in this as well.
Yeah, so we actually had some people commenting and sending us messages about this and wondering what it was all about, and people can't cuss anymore and all this stuff. That's not what this is. If you read the actual rule, it's you can't use it towards someone. You can't be offensive towards someone. So you can't call a cast member a name or cuss at a cast member or another guest. If you stub your toe and say a dirty word, you're not going to get kicked from the park, basically. I think what this is that they know now, because of Disney World opening, that there were people that did not want to play by the rules and wanted to yell and scream and thought, if I just yell loud enough, they'll let me do what I want because I'm a toddler. And so they're just putting these rules in place, I think, so they have clear guidance that, like, hey, it says right here in writing that we can kick you out for this. So with the parks reopening in just over a week, the Disney Parks blog has posted their dining guide. Select locations will be open for dining booking on April 22nd with limited capacity. Reservations can be made up to 60 days in advance. For a complete list of all the locations that will be open with the links to the menus, check out the link in our show notes.
So I had some time was checking out the menus, and it was interesting because some of the menus, most of the menus, I'm going to say, we'll say most, were limited. So kind of if there's some favorites of yours that you always need to have, like Tag, I'm sorry to tell you, but I looked at the menu where you always get your bao buns, and bao buns,
I did not see the bao buns,
did not make it over onto the Tropical Hideaways menu. And there were some other things too, like I think we talk about some other menu changes later, but if there are some favorites, make sure you pay attention and you look at the menus prior to going so that you know what you're getting yourself into. Some things I noticed that are sticking around that were there for the Touch of Disney.
Sure.
So I thought that was kind of fun. So I don't know. It's still just very exciting to me.
Part of me, okay, so I have two thoughts about this. One, yes, they probably, because I think we had talked about this on the podcast previously, that it is going to take quite a while just to get things stocked back to a good level. So I assume that they're ordering what they can. And as items, as the ingredients for these dishes become available and their staffing gets back up to normal, that these things will come back. I don't think bao buns are gone.
No,
I don't think some of these places only have one or two dishes, and that seems like, wow. Yeah. So if you only want that one thing, you go there.
Yeah. So just heads up, the items are, or menus are much more limited. So just plan accordingly. So one example specifically would be at the Plaza Inn. For example, the Plaza Inn only has fried chicken as an entree right now. Beignets are also disappearing from Cafe Orleans, but they are still available over at the Mint Julep Bar. Another thing, too, that I noticed was the Monte Cristo sandwich, which was available at Smoke Jumpers in DCA, is going to still be available once the parks reopen. The half Monte Cristo sandwich will still be available in DCA. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I like that. I did. Yeah. I did not know how much a Monte Cristo was before because I've never ordered one.
Sure.
And I looked at the menu and I noticed that they are $21 for this sandwich.
They're big.
I mean, they come with frites now.
Yeah.
Was a big deal.
Yeah.
So that's exciting that you, it's a fairly decent deal. But I think when I go to the park, I think I'll stick with Smoke Jumpers with the half size because that was more than enough. And we shared that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, now I was going to see if I could talk you into doing the Monte Cristo with the pommes frites fries.
Well, if there's four of us, we can all share.
Yes, I've never tried the pommes frites fries and everybody seems to rave about them. So I feel like it's a must.
Yeah. More locations are being added to the long list of locations accepting mobile ordering. The Tropical Hideaway, the French Market Restaurant, and the Plaza Inn will now be mobile friendly. Studio Catering Company in DCA will also join this list.
You know, this is interesting. And when I found this news story, it felt like, I don't know. I don't know how to like even describe the feeling when I saw it, because this was a lot of what we were reporting on prior to the park's closing was mobile ordering expanding. So mm-hmm. It just felt like, I don't know. It felt like the parks hadn't been open for a minute. Like, does that make sense? Like, it felt like normal park news to like be reporting on. So I got stupidly excited. Like, there was no reason for me to be excited, but it gave me like warm, fuzzy feels when I saw this one. But I mean, not a surprise, right? Mobile ordering makes sense
mm-hmm.
since we're trying to do a lot of contactless stuff.
I think it's just good going forward, too, because one of the things that they tried a few years ago with FastPass and then MaxPass afterwards is they wanted to get more people, like, you know, out spending money doing things. Well, if you can mobile order, you're not spending that time standing in line, you know, to order your food or whatever, and it can be a much better experience. Touch of Disney was different, but when we were in Disney World, I thought the mobile experience was great.
Yeah, well,
so I assume Disneyland will be the same.
Yeah, and same thing the couple times that we did mobile ordering in Disneyland during the D23 trip. That was great, too.
That's true.
Minus, we did have one hiccup that we never got alerted that our food was ready when we were at a restaurant, so that wasn't
But that
so
was
great,
when the system was, like, new.
Yeah, that was, I don't really blame that. I think it's nice, especially now, to have options, to have the option to be able to order and pay through the app on your phone and just go pick up your stuff. Or if you're somebody that likes to stand in line and like look at the physical menu hanging there, you have that option too.
Sure.
Last minute dining reservations can now be secured through the mobile walk-up waitlist feature. This allows guests to get on a waitlist for a location without having to interact with the host of that location. For now, it's only in place at Lamplight Lounge and Carthay Circle.
Yeah, I imagine that this will be expanded to other places depending on how busy it is and stuff like that. So it's nice to not have to wait in line to talk to the host when if you can just walk up and either scan the QR code or just go in the Disneyland mm-hmm. app and put yourself on that list. I think we actually saw this. Didn't we see this working at Lamplight Lounge?
Yeah. Yep. They had this going for Touch of Disney. So you could do the mobile wait list to see if there's any availability. So, and that was kind of a nice thing because those reservations went like faster than you could say Mickey. And so, but it did still give people the opportunity to be able to possibly still eat at those locations because of the walk-up thing. So, you know, it doesn't hurt. That's one of the first times that I got to eat at Blue Bayou was we couldn't get a reservation, but we decided to walk up right at 4 o'clock, talk to the host, mm-hmm. and we were able to get seated right away. And I think we actually were able to do a dining package walking up that way for the Fantasmic dining package, which that was nuts. I do think we will see this mobile waitlist being added to the Blue Bayou.
I'm sure. Dining locations of the Grand Californian Hotel and Spa, including GCH Craftsman Bar, GCH Craftsman Grill, and the Hearthstone Lounge will be open for dining, but you must be a hotel guest to eat there. The hotel, along with these locations, is reopening on April 29th, one day before the park's return, which makes sense.
You know, I was a little surprised by this because when Walt Disney World, when they reopened and when we were there, anybody could go make reservations to the hotel or at the hotel places. So you could go, we could have gone to eat at,
well, wherever. We did go eat at a bunch of different places. We ate at the Grand Floridian. We went at the to the Contemporary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, how'd you forget that whole night? We like went to like a bunch of places.
I kind of, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I slightly forgot that they were like in hotels because we went right to the dining area. So I kind of forgot about that part. So I'm surprised that Disneyland is doing this. And the other reason that I'm surprised is I just can't see very much demand from hotel guests to then justify for these dining locations to be open.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I don't foresee this staying like this for too long.
Maybe it's a perk, like for those hotel guests, like because like Downtown Disney could be really busy. So they're like, well, we'll just go eat at the Grand California since we're staying there.
It'll be interesting if this rule will still be in place when the Disneyland Hotel reopens, because, of course, Trader Sam's is located on the Disneyland Hotel property or whatever.
Next story.
Speaking of which, with the limitations being put on who can enter the hotel areas of the resort, scan-in gates are being added to the Disneyland Hotel entrances. These scan-in gates are expected to be used in the evenings after the grounds close to the public to allow hotel guests only onto the property.
I'm not really sure why they're doing this, because I didn't, I mean, maybe there was stuff we never heard about that was a problem with people being on the grounds after hours, but I don't know. It didn't seem like when we were there for D23, you know, like Trader Sam's stuff is open late. It's open till bar time, I assume, or close to it. And so are they going to stay open until that closes, or is that location going to close earlier now? I don't know. There's so many questions. But I wasn't sure why this is being installed. I will say it is nicer to have a gated area around the Disneyland Hotel that isn't just a temporary fence if they do need to close it off like right now.
Exactly. Well, and I was just thinking, think about how the Disneyland Hotel is versus how like the Grand Californian is. The Grand Californian, you basically are going through gates.
You are.
To get to the hotel. So I guess, you know, when you think of it that way, it makes sense that they're going to try and do the same thing for the Disneyland Hotel. Then it's nice because like right now, like you were saying, instead of having temporary fencing around things when they aren't able to have the public in, it's something easier to put up.
Well, Visit Anaheim has some great deals listed on their site for local hotels. Some of the promotions include legacy pass holder rates, regular discounts, and a free limited edition Disneyland Resort Castle stainless steel water bottle. These deals seem to run until June 30th, but act fast as they are sure to book up fast. Please visit the link in the show notes for all the locations and deals.
I wish we could go early just because I want to go early, but this Sleeping Beauty water bottle. I don't know what it is about it, but it's beautiful. So hopefully some weekly tiers are able to take part in some of these great deals and some of these great like bonuses that you get at some of these hotels. I want to say the Fairfield is one of the places that does have this stainless steel water bottle as one of the promotions. But I saw things like 25% off rooms. I just kind of was trying to click around. It does take a little bit of digging to find what each hotel is offering exactly. But yeah, tons of great deals. So if you've got your park tickets,
is any of the places you've stayed at before on here, like the one that you and Vern really liked?
Yeah. So there's a couple of them on there. I gotta like think.
Grand Legacy, we were looking at it one time.
Yep.
Hyatt House, which All Enchanting Years really likes. Yep. Oh, King's Inn, that's where I used to stay the time.
So way back in the day, I have stayed at the La Quinta with my family, and there's the La Quinta there. They also have the Clementine, which my family really, really likes the Clementine. And then Desert Palms is the one that Vern and I went and stayed at during Pixar Fest.
Oh, right here. Anaheim Desert there Palms.
I'm like, I saw it on the list. Maybe it's called something else.
I'll tell you what, though. I stayed at the Anaheim Hotel like a bajillion years ago, and I was just looking at this graphic that they have from there.
Ooh.
These look so much nicer than when I stayed there. They've obviously done like a remodel and stuff. So, and this place has a beautiful garden and pool and stuff. So we might have to. We haven't even talked about hotel for our potential stay yet. So we'll have to figure that out. But like we said, a lot of these end on June 30th. So before, we'll have an opportunity to take advantage of them.
Last week, we talked about the updates coming to the Haunted Mansion, including updates and additions to the Pet Cemetery. Well, Disney Parks posted some closer looks at this area of the attraction on their TikTok account, which WDW News Today posted on their site.
So I know we're talking about the pet cemetery here, but I was looking at photos today of the area, like, right before you get on the doom buggy. So I went and looked up some old ride-through footage because I was trying to figure out what was there before. Because I remember that path, but I didn't remember the wall. The wall was nothing. There was just cobwebs there.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better because we were talking earlier today, and I'm like, I'm a little embarrassed. I don't remember what that area looked like before, and I think it's because I was always looking over at the doom buggies, which is probably why they didn't take too much time to theme that corner, because everybody was so excited to get on the ride that they were looking at, you know, looking ahead at the doom buggies.
Yeah, you could look here. So I'm showing a picture for our stream people, but this wall here and this wall, see, it's all just black with cobwebs. Yeah. And if I pull up,
and there were some like candelabra things that were in front of it.
If I pull up the Disney one now, see, it's that same wall
totally
is now wallpapered. It's got the stuff. So, and I had a much better look at this little divider, which looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I think this might stay, actually.
It doesn't look temporary to
because,
me.
Because in the video I saw,
look at these like globe-like things that are hanging
in the
there.
Video that I saw, this area right here is actually where people stand and wait when they're waiting to get on if they need assistance getting onto the thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, because that area is kind of right over here. So before it was just kind of this big open area. So I think that it will be a nice new themed area. They've done a wonderful job. I can't wait to see this in person.
It's themed so well. And going back to the pet cemetery, some of the things that they talked about was there's a like skunk grave and they've planted like chives there. So it's like smelly. And there was,
I thought it was garlic.
Oh, that was it. Garlic. And there was, what's the other one? There was a rabbit and they planted like cabbage, some like decorative cabbage there. And we talked about the like the bullfrog that had the little lily pad type plants that were planted next to it. I just love all the details. I think that's so fun.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to sit there. The thing is for me is like plants and stuff like that. Like, I don't know what these plants are. Force sensitive folks who want to build their own lightsabers at Savvy's workshop may find the price has gone up. In Florida at Disney's Hollywood Studios, the price just increased from $199 to $219 per builder. The price at Disneyland is still listed as $199, but that could change before reopening.
You know, it's interesting. To me, right, $199 just sounds like a good price point. $219 doesn't just flow as well, but I don't know. I wonder if maybe it's a, if it, they're having to mine crystals and they needed extra funding for those miners or what they're, you know.
Well, with social distancing, they're probably not mining as many.
That's true.
So, producer James over there, what do you think about this price increase? Because you are one of the people who want to get your lightsaber.
I mean, a $20 increase, I don't feel like it's too much when we're talking Disney memorabilia. I'm a little bummed because I don't see a good reason for the price to go up at this point.
It's the mining of the Kyber crystals.
Oh, right. This isn't like the chips for laptops and other devices right now. I don't imagine there's a major shortage of Kyber crystals. So.
One of the last holdouts in Downtown Disney has reopened for guests. Splitsville Luxury Lanes returned this past week with some new health and safety measures. Bowling is open with limited availability, and indoor and outdoor dining is also open. Like most other locations, plexiglass has been installed where groups might be close together. Face masks must be worn except for when eating and drinking, and a lot of sanitation will be utilized.
Yeah, I want to experience Splitsville one of these times. From before, I don't know if this is a chain, I'm sure it hasn't. It just seemed really pricey for bowling and like food. But the location and their theming is pretty amazing. So I'm glad that they did reopen. Mm-hmm. I believe that they reopened when Downtown Disney reopened the first time. And then I think they closed down and then they never came back.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember.
I know it hasn't been open at all this year yet. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see another Downtown Disney location back open, and with the exception of what, Sprinkles, and maybe one or two other places, that everything's open now.
The other thing to note too was the area that the Void was is now actually got construction walls up around it,
right.
So we might be seeing something moving in to that empty space.
Well, the Void was like sued out of existence or whatever by Disney or whatever, the contract breach.
Mm-hmm.
With April being Earth Month, Disney has announced that some of its classic dolls will be packaged without plastic and instead use 100% recyclable packaging. The dolls with this package will be available at Shop Disney, select Disney stores, and Disney parks. Also, someone in the comments noticed that they included a boy and a girl playing with the dolls, which helps to normalize those who wish to do so.
These, you know, the dolls are not my thing, which is, I mean, that's
You never
fine.
Had dolls?
I never really got too into dolls. I don't know why, but I got really excited about the not the doll, but the packaging.
Are you a cat, secretly?
Am I a cat? Maybe. So, but the thing that's cool about the packaging is as you open it, the packaging's very well themed, and it almost looked like you could use it as, like part of your like play
like
set with the doll.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought that was very cool. And it just, it looks so much nicer than like that terrible plastic thing that is so hard for anybody to get open. And it just causes all these,
You're giving me
like flashbacks.
Yeah, PTSD, because when I have to help our nieces and nephews open things, those things are like, you are not ever supposed to get them out of these boxes.
Yeah.
So, plus it's better for the environment. I will say, I didn't even think about the fact that there was a boy in this video, but I do want to mention
that
because when I was younger, I had two friends that were girls that lived in the same apartment complex as me, and one of my friends, Jessica, her mom used to call them boy toys. So I had a bunch of Jurassic Park toys like that. And she had Barbies. And it was just something different. Because sometimes, you know, you have what you have and other people have what they have. And sometimes it's nice just to swap because it's playing with something different when you're a kid.
Yep.
So we used to trade. I would loan her my boy toys of Jurassic Park stuff. And then she'd loan me like her Barbie stuff. And it was great. This did lead to a problem later, which this is helping to, I think, make normal and overcome, which was when I was in high school, her mom was one of the like campus supervisors. Mm-hmm. And I won't say the name she used to call me. It's totally G rated. I just don't want to have it be out there. But she used to call me this cutesy little nickname. And she yelled, "Hi," this nickname to me. And she turned to the other monitor and said, "Oh, it's all right. Staying at the same volume. "Oh, it's all right. He used to play Barbies with my daughter." Mm-hmm. When you're in high school and that's yelled across the campus. Yeah. So, but I'm very glad that they're doing some more recyclable stuff and this is going along with that inclusion key that we talked about last week.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
So we also had another story we wanted to talk about.
Yes, so there is new merch that was just like teased today. It's the Magic is Back merchandise collection that will be, of course, debuting at Disneyland on, you guessed it, April 30th. I really like I just really like the look of it. It's like fun and playful, but it also has like the retro feel because we've got the classic Disneyland sign on it. I just there's a t-shirt, one of the t-shirts I know I want. I want the aqua blue t-shirt that has like, oh, I just love it. And you like the darker blue t-shirt, don't you?
I do like the darker blue t-shirt. So this one, okay, I just wanted to see. It does say the Magic is Back, the light blue one that you were looking at. I really like, there's even a mask that goes along with this. And I like that. I love this logo they have for this, which looks real fun. They've got a bunch of the icons of the parks in these like little circles and they're kind of silhouetted. It just looks fun. I want like all of this. There has not been a series of stuff like this that I have wanted like all of it.
Yeah.
Normally it's like, oh, I like a shirt or I like a thing, but this was like, I like the shirt, I like the logo, I like the cup, I like the mask.
I was gonna say, I also quite, not that I need any more coffee cups in my life, but I do really like the tumbler. Well, now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to ask us four questions. We will attempt to answer them. And then, of course, we're going to get the correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
Well, we're taking a tour of a couple of attractions. So our first one comes from listener Liberty M. Which Disneyland attraction opened first, the Matterhorn bobsleds or It's a Small World?
Matterhorn bobsleds, 1959, June, even.
I thought you might like an easy one to start, so thanks. Liberty for that.
Thank you, Liberty.
Question number two from Om D in the Haunted Mansion, since we're getting excited for that one and the refresh. At least as of before the pandemic, there are five singing busts in the graveyard scene. Two of them have significant differences from the rest. Can you tell me what these differences are?
Well, one of them is toppled over.
Yeah, one of them
and
is
broken.
And I think
one's missing a nose, isn't it, or something?
I think one has it like a hat on.
Oh, maybe.
I don't think one's missing a nose. Maybe one's missing a nose. I think one's wearing a hat and one is like,
well, the one
broken
is fallen over.
Yeah,
for
toppled
sure.
over. I wonder if they have names.
They do have names. I'm sure they do.
They have to. I don't know what their names are though.
We
okay,
can
so
look it up later.
One's toppled over and broken, and I'm going to say a hat. What are you? And you're going to say losing a nose?
Sure.
All right. Good guesses. Number three from listener Jill M.
Oh no!
You remembered?
Is it one backwards?
Why would one be backwards?
Like, isn't the head down and the pedestals on top?
I don't know.
I'm going to shoot. Dang it.
This is your attraction, Teresa.
I know. It's been too long. I haven't been in there. I don't remember.
I feel like Teresa's going to, like, crawl up on the floor and just, like, rock back and forth. I don't remember.
I'm changing my answer. Maybe one has a hat, too. But I think one of them's, like, backwards, like the pedestal's on top and the head's down.
Mm. Upside down.
Yeah, but it's still, like, the head's the right way. It's not like it's totally flipped over.
Okay.
Pretty soon we're going to start remembering a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, you never know.
Maybe one of them has freckles.
Could.
Oh, geez. Anyway.
Our third question. Our third question this week comes from listener Jill M. On It's a Small World, what shape are the pendulums of the cuckoo clocks in Switzerland?
What shape are the... I'm going to say... cheese. They look like Swiss cheese.
I'm gonna say half moons.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know why that just seems like the right answer.
Sometimes you can trust your gut, right? Other times it leads you astray. Our final question, and this one's a bit of an opinion question, so not necessarily a right answer, but which attraction at the resort do you believe you get the wettest on?
Oh, Splash Mountain.
At the resort?
Yeah.
Oh, Grizzly River Run, obviously, time we went on
there. Yeah, no, I think consistently you get more wet on Splash Mountain than you do at Grizzly. Because only the one time have I had a bad experience with that geyser.
Yeah. I want to say specifically that one stupid interior roll thing where you come up and it like dumps water into the stupid log. I'm going to say Grizzly River Run, though, because that was my first, like, I've never been that wet on Splash.
That's true. That's very true.
Never.
Yeah. I think for consistency-wise, Splash.
Sure. If
you have the worst timing
ever.
If I had to bet
if I was going to get wet on one or the other, I would consistently bet Splash, except for the time that was awful. It's all right, James. Maybe you'll get lucky when you're there with us and it won't have that happen.
Oh, you mean maybe I will get lucky and the geysers will all go off on us and it'll be fantastic?
Side note, the Grizzly River is full again.
Ooh.
Well, it is about the time that it would normally be done with its refurbishment.
Yeah. That's a good sign. So, hey, a quick run through the questions this week. We'll see if their quick guesses are the right guesses after our discussion topic this week.
We didn't really like
see, Ace
go back
said,
and forth on it.
Ace said, my experience working with it, riding it, it was Grizzly. So maybe I'm right. Before we get to the discussion topic this week, I did want to chime in here and say that there are parts of the interview that kind of lift the curtain behind the magic. So if you're concerned about ruining the magic for your fantastic listening and viewing pleasure, maybe skip this interview. But generally, it's a great, great interview, and we highly recommend that you listen to it. But just be aware that there are some spoilers in here.
This week, Tag and I are like extra excited because we have former cast member Vanessa with us, and she got to do some pretty amazing things in her time at Disney because she got to work in Fantasmic and like be there, right? Like, we have to sit on the other side of the river to be like enjoying Fantasmic, and she got to be right there in all the action. So welcome, Vanessa. We are so excited to chat with you tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So we're going to begin, of course, like we always do, and just kind of get to know you a little bit better. So can you tell us, what is your Disney story?
My Disney story is when I was friends with Mickey, we got to play in Fantasmic.
That's amazing. Super amazing. So were you always a fan of Disney, or did your friendship with Mickey make you a fan of Disney and Disneyland?
My friendship with Mickey actually made me a fan. As a young girl, I would go to Disneyland like once a year with my family, and I truly loved it. But I wasn't one of those Disney fans like I became after being friends with Mickey.
I love that. That's like the best Disney story there is. I'm a Disneyland fan because I got to hang out with Mickey. That's
who wouldn't be?
I don't know how you couldn't be after that.
So when you go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go through the Castle of Fantasyland, right towards Tomorrowland? What's your kind of attack plan on that first day?
I go directly left, and I want to hit Pirates of the Caribbean first.
Nice.
So I ask this all the time now, so what is it about Pirates that makes it so magical and like the first stop for you?
You know, it's a few different things, but one of the weird things to me is the smell.
Yeah.
Something about the smell in there, I love, and it reminds me of Disneyland. So the smell of it going through the little lagoon area and everything about it just is a huge memory for me of being little and going to Disneyland.
I mean, the smell is like one of the most iconic things about that attraction.
And the thing that's so crazy about that smell is I feel like it's so distinct, but also impossible to like describe or really be able to recreate.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of different like candle companies out there. I've tried it with soap and I'm just like, nope, that's not right.
I will say I did have some, because it's the bromine smell, mm-hmm. I did have some bromine stuff for the hot tub.
Yeah.
And during the winter here in Wisconsin, the hot tub's in the garage. So the garage did kind of smell piratey a couple times. So I was like,
nice.
I feel like you need to
hang out in the garage then.
I feel like you need to like decorate your garage like pirates too. Like,
oh goodness!
You can have your own. I don't know.
Like, I gotta fix the hot tub first because right now it's broken.
Place, and you have a pirate with his foot hanging over your garage door.
Wow.
So, would you say then that Pirates is your favorite attraction? And if not, what is your favorite attraction?
That is one of my favorites. I have a ton of favorites there. It's a Small World, Peter Pan. Like, there are so many. I truly love Disneyland and all of its old appeal that it has. The newer attractions aren't my favorite only because it's not what I grew up with.
Sure.
So the older ones are all, I just love them all.
At least you admit that, because I feel like some people don't like the new attractions and they just say, I don't like the new attractions. And they don't acknowledge that it's because they have that sentimentality and stuff that goes along with those attractions being there when you were younger and all that stuff. So good self-awareness there for sure. So, oh my goodness, I don't even know where to start. But I think what I'm going to start is, how did you land the job working on this iconic show?
Well, this is kind of funny and interesting. A girlfriend of mine, we were friends all through school and we were dancers growing up. We, you know, performed and did jazz and ballet dancing, and she was very tall and I'm short. I'm 5 foot, and she's like 5'11", somewhere around there. She found out that Disneyland was having auditions for the electrical parade.
Oh.
And she's like, let's go and audition for electrical parade. I'm like, no way, you know, I'm not going to get in there. Yeah, let's do it. I just went with her for the audition just to go with her and be a friend and hang out. But I did take my jazz shoes and stuff just in case. And so we get there. There were a line of people. It was crazy. And they separated us by height. So they had all the short people go in one area, all the tall people go in another area. And the tall people were shown a ballet routine. And so then they had to do it by twos across the dance floor in front of like a panel of judges. You almost felt like you were in a, you know, beauty contest or whatever. And then the short ones, we learned a jazz routine. And so we did that across. Well, as you do that, they'll tell you, okay, you go sit on this side of the room. You go sit on that side of the room. Then at the end, they said, okay, everyone on this side, thank you so much for your time. Everyone on this side, you're moving on. I was released at that point. I was in the side that it was, you know, time for me to go home. My girlfriend made it further along. So I'm sitting there, time's going by, it's getting dark, I'm getting bored. And I start like watching them practice a new routine that they're going to have to go and try and do across the dance floor again. And I'm like, I can do that routine. I wonder if they'll even know that they dismissed me 2 hours ago. So I decide I'm just going to mix on in with the crowd. And I'm going to try and do this routine and make it pass.
Oh, my God. I'm in tears. I'm just going to. No one will notice. It's fine.
Well, I mean, everybody who got dismissed probably had left by that point.
Yeah. I went ahead and I went through the audition again. They separated us again and I sat on the other side. So I thought I made it past this time. But nope, I was let go a second time.
Oh, no.
So
sitting there again, waiting for my friend. And I'm thinking, I wonder if I could do it a third. By this time, it was like way down. There weren't enough people for me to kind of mix in that they have noticed. So my girlfriend ended up getting a part. She was one of the dancers for Cinderella and the ballroom dancers.
Oh,
and
wow.
She got a part. And so I was super excited for her. And we go home and I thought, okay, well, that was fun. You know, what an experience. The next day I get a call asking if I was interested in auditioning for a new show that they had not come out yet, but that they were working on called Fantasmic. And I said, sure, I'll go. And they said, okay, well, if you can come and be here this evening, we'd love to have you. All right. So I go down. There were probably 5 of us girls all around the same height. And they had us hold this heavy wooden sword. And I had no idea what the heck I was doing. But they said, okay, pretend that you're Mickey Mouse. And this dragon is there just breathing fire and stuff. And you're going to just kill him with this sword and be this superhero. And I'm like, okay, like, how do I do this? And then they kind of played the music of Brave Little Taylor Mickey with the dragon. And so I just did it and I could barely lift that heavy wooden sword, and I'm holding it with 2 hands and my arms are shaking. But it turned out that I got the part. So I was cast as Brave Little Taylor Mickey Part B. So there was an A group and a B group, and I was the B group.
How cool. Did that affect like what your schedule was on like what nights you got to be out? Okay, cool.
Yes. So A group was I'm trying to remember if it was Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday. And B, we were, I believe, just Saturday and Sunday.
But that was 2 shows a night. So that's.
Yes.
Well, and that's like the heavy weekend days, too. Yeah. So even though you were B, I mean, you worked less, but you got more people probably.
More bang
right.
The time she was there, though. She got to do two shows. That's
so
amazing.
After you got. After you got cast in this, what was the process further on before the premiere? Because this was before the premiere, you said.
Right. So they were still working on the Mark Twain Island at that time. They were still putting everything into place. Not everything was quite built yet. So we rehearsed a lot in one of the rehearsal conference rooms on the back of the lot. And that was different because rehearsing in a room and then rehearsing out on stage with everything, with the lights, with, you know, all that's going on is 2 totally different things. So we did that for a while. Once Mark Twain Island was starting to get up and running, then we would rehearse at night. So once the park would close, like at midnight, we would be there rehearsing until like 8 a.m. when they reopened.
Wow.
So we had, it was like the biggest slumber party with a bunch of your friends, all in character with wigs on and makeup. And we had cots laid out on Mark Twain Island. We had hot cocoa machines and hot, coffee and water. And we would just hang out there all night until it was time for us to rehearse our individual part.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay. First of all, just that you're part of the opening of this just amazing show. But the fact that you got to camp on Tom Sawyer Island is just, I don't know why. Like, that's just hilarious to me. Because
that's awesome.
That's one of those things that everybody, especially kids, how fun would it be to like camp out here? And you actually got to do that. That's just,
yes.
What a weird little perk. So
it's really fun.
The thing that's so amazing to me about the show Fantasmic is just all of the different parts and all of the different things that happen in a space that looks normal and just like nothing during the day. So can you kind of tell us about what it was like to be backstage, or like what it was like to be putting on that show in that space?
Yeah, absolutely. So the fun thing about it all is seeing Mickey from behind everything,
oh.
You know, and seeing that vision of things, mm-hmm. seeing Belle put on her dress and, you know, those sort of things were so cool to actually see and know who they are and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I did was I was also friends with Pa. And so I believe I was like the fifth pod in Pa. And so that was our first part. And then we would make our way back around the stage in front of Mark Twain and then into the back, took off our Ka pod, and then went into the shed or shack, whatever you want to call it, where we would get dressed. But also listening to the cues and the music of knowing when Mickey had to be out on stage,
oh.
And having our costume people and our pyrotech people that would hold Mickey's hand, guide him out so that he walked down the stairs safely and got to his spot safely, so that when the lights came back on, Mickey was there and ready to perform. And then seeing Mickey go on the lifts and in the different parts of
mm-hmm.
Fantasmic, I mean, those are just things that some people think that it took the magic away for them. To me, it just built that magic up even more, because that was so exciting to see that side of things.
Oh, I can't even imagine. They would kick me off. They'd be like, ma'am.
One of the things that sticks in my mind so much with Fantasmic was the very first time I saw it, I could not believe that they set the river on fire. Can you describe the first time that you saw the river on fire?
Yes, actually, I vividly remember that. Being friends with Brave Little Taylor, that was huge for him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So having first the fireworks come out of the sword,
mm-hmm.
and then this fire that blew up, the heat from it, you could even feel, you know, and it was amazing. It was the coolest feeling knowing I was a part of that. And then another quick little story is that when they were shooting commercials for Fantasmic, I got to be a part of that commercial. And I remember when the fire came, they had all of the extras and stuff, you know, standing out there, and the kids that were supposed to ooh and ah and stuff, they were honestly oohing and aahing and being like, oh my gosh, you know, from the fire that was coming. They, you know, it's just one of those things that you don't, maybe you expect to see in like a Las Vegas sort of show, but you don't expect that at Disneyland. And during that time, you didn't see shows like that. And it was just amazing.
You know, the thing I was thinking about, too, is, you know, back to the whole how that area is just, you know, just a normal, it's the normal, calm Rivers of America. So then suddenly having it, seeing it at night and seeing it set ablaze is just such like, I don't know, it's like black and white. It's such a different, you know, different use of the river, different way to see the river. But I was also just thinking, you got to like hang out and be friends with Mickey during, like we were saying, during the beginning of Fantasmic. So the Fantasmic that you got to be a part of is almost a different show than the one that we have now. So, because you had, like, Ursula was a part of that show.
Yes.
Were Flotsam and Jetsam part of TikTok. That show or not quite yet?
Not quite yet.
But that TikTok. Ursula, that was, TikTok I never one. Got to see Ursula in that show. And I am sad that I never got to, because, of course, videos of it are just... not
Ursula
good.
Was cool.
But yes. what was Ursula like?
Ursula was like a big inflatable. Like if you think of the inflatables at Christmas time, she was a big inflatable on a barge that someone was driving. They had so many issues, though, with that barge. And there was always something that they were repairing it. So sometimes she wasn't able to be out in the show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she actually wouldn't work in the middle of a show. So another barge would have to come and push it out of the way. So there were, you know, different things that occurred with Ursula. So I can see why they took her out. I wish they would bring her back and just somehow make it mechanically better so that she wouldn't go into not being able to work mode. Yeah.
Well, and just think of the dragon then versus the dragon now. Could you imagine if they did the same thing for Ursula and had that same quality of barge for Ursula now? That would just be.
Yeah, it's you're amazing. Right. It's a totally kind of different show now. I do remember Ursula and TikTok going behind the Columbia. And I've heard lots of stories. You were talking about Ursula breaking down. I've heard lots of stories because of the fact that the Mark Twain and the Columbia have to kind of go at full speed. They're not really designed in normal park day usage to go that fast for timing with the show, that sometimes they break down and they have like little dinghy boats that come out and push it off.
That's exactly it. That is exactly it. That's happened several times when I was there. So yeah, there are a lot of mishaps. Everything's happening live. And even in today's technology, we know with, you know, computer systems, they crash at any given moment. So back then, the technology wasn't as great either. So those things happened a lot. I remember one time even the pirates and all the real active aerobatic pirates on the ship, they are actually stunt people. Yep. They're hired stunt people. And so I remember one cracking his ribs as it was Peter Pan flying up and he hit a pole and kept on going with it. But then afterwards, it was like, oh man, you know, he cracked his ribs. So there's a lot of, you know, moving pieces to the show. And at any given time, something like that could happen.
Wow, that's crazy. The other thing that I was sitting here thinking, too, and like finally realizing, I know you said this a while ago, but you got to be friends with Mickey when Mickey was battling the dragon. So what was that like to like put Miss Maleficent in her place?
It was actually so much fun. It's not like one of the highlighted parts of the show, I think, because you have traditional Mickey at the very beginning and at the very end. And then you have Sorcerer Mickey, and that's huge. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Brave Little Taylor Mickey gets a whole lot of credit, yet he's like the star in getting rid of Maleficent and all these evil imagination thoughts that are going. So, but that was always so much fun to see Maleficent just grow up on that tower, get big, and then, you know, getting to know Maleficent was just, he was great. We were great friends throughout the whole time there. So,
yeah. So for those of you that don't know, Maleficent usually, her best friend for the show is actually a male. So that's something that I didn't realize for a while.
Who was on that was talking about that? Was that Meg?
It may have been Meg. I know.
I think it was Meg talking
Meg,
about.
Meg may have told us. I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyways,
but yes.
Yeah.
Yep. But the best friend of Maleficent is usually male for the show, which is crazy. Couldn't imagine that would probably be the one person I would not want to be best friends with for that show, because I would not want to be with them when they get raised up.
Oh, sure.
That seems a little, I'm not it's that all big
safe.
Of a fan of heights.
It's all safe.
I know. I remembered hearing a podcast of yours, and you guys were wondering about the evil queen.
Yes.
And if it was one person that did like some character change or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to let you know it's two people.
Yeah.
One is in the cauldron.
Yeah.
And then as she waves her hands and the smoke and the flashing of lights, they grab each other's hands, pulls one out, and the other one is able to slide in. And that's how that's.
Imagine how long it takes to master that trick.
You know,
it's like a split, you know, well, it's not a lot of time.
There's a lot of stuff about this show that I look at, and I think technologically and skill from mm-hmm. the performers wise, you know, the end, the timing with Sorcerer Mickey to Classic Mickey on the stage has to be spot on, because whatever lift they have for that, I assume, does not move that fast, because I don't think that would be safe for it to just drop, you know, like a water slide or something. But, you know, I've seen it. And what you were saying about with the queen is, on certain days, especially if you go look on YouTube, when the wind is going the right direction and the fog cannot conceal it, you can kind of see it better.
But still, just the fact that they're making that quick switch.
Yeah.
That fast in that tight of a space. And they're dealing with all of the fog in their faces while they're trying to do it, too. It's just
now. So you mentioned this earlier, and this is something that I don't know if a lot of people know. But can you kind of talk about the fact that I think almost everybody in the show has more than one role?
Correct. Yes. So a lot of, like, Prince Eric, he also would be one of the elephants that light up the glow elephants in the program. A lot of them did the puppeteers for Pinocchio. So everyone had more than one role in there, and it was fun.
I feel like the coordination must have been crazy, because if people get delayed somewhere, like, it's not a very long show, really.
Right. No, you're running backstage. You're running from place to place. And the cool thing is that they do have costume people who help you just stand there, and they put everything on you.
That's nice.
And you're ready to go.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yes. So my favorite part of the show, I'm stuck on your like starring moment with
Mickey. Sorry.
So the dragon, right? When the dragon comes out and is there in all of her evil glory, if you will, I don't know. Was there ever any time that you and Mickey would have to maybe, I don't know, do something different because maybe Maleficent wasn't playing nice that day?
Sometimes Maleficent wouldn't come and become as tall as she really is. So, and that was okay. We just went with it where she was. Sometimes the dragon didn't come out or he didn't spit his fire.
Oh.
That was okay. I continued, Mickey and I continued to do what we needed to do. And the point gets across, I think. Anyway, it's just not as exciting when those things occur. But Mickey keeps going forward and, you know, everyone still loves it because unless they have seen it a lot of times or they've seen it before, they don't know that they were missing out on something.
Sure. Now, for some of those times when the dragon was being extra dragony, did Mickey know that before or was that something Mickey learned like in the moment? Like, okay, we're not playing nice today. I guess we're only going to. It's going to be easier for me today. You're not as big and fierce.
It was both. So sometimes we would hear ahead of time saying on the walkie, you know, this isn't going to happen. Be prepared. Other times I was out there and I just knew because I could see what was going on. Sure. And so Mickey and I would just play it by ear at that point.
Interesting.
So I don't want to, I don't want to seem like I'm trying to throw you under the bus here, but I'm curious, like, did you ever, like, what was your biggest, like, mishap on stage, you and Mickey together? Did you ever have a thing where maybe you lost your footing or dropped your sword or?
I was lucky that I did not have a mishap. I think there was a time when, we were all trained to do different part of the show just in case someone called out sick. And so I had the opportunity to actually be traditional Mickey a couple of times. Mm. And traditional Mickey and I would get nervous with that because traditional Mickey stepped on these stairs and dances along. And as you go up the stairs, you arm your pyrotechnics out of your gloves. Mm-hmm. So there was one time where I armed my pyrotech and it, without pushing the buttons in my glove to just let them off, one did go off as my hand was pointed down. So I quickly went up with my hand and we did really well. So going backstage at that time, everyone was making sure that Mickey's clothes weren't burned and Mickey was all okay and everything was fine. But that was just kind of, you know, you're messing with pyrotechnics and you just never know. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting thing that occurred to me outside of being Brave Little Taylor.
So did you get training and stuff? Did they train you guys for mishaps like this? What you're supposed to do if something goes off wrong or no?
No.
They just put you in the gloves and said, good luck.
You knew what your routine was and you were always trained as a performer anywhere. You're trained to, you know, things might happen and you continue on with your show. Mickey's clothes are flame retardant. And so, you know, chances of anything happening are really slim. They have the best pyrotechnics around and they're prepared for any emergencies. So, you know, you're safe. You're really safe. I mean, things could happen, but things could happen driving down the road. Yeah. So
how long did you get to be friends with Mickey in Fantasmic for?
I was friends with him for about a year and a half.
Wow.
Every year you have to re-audition for your part.
Sure.
And so there was always that chance that you may not be friends with Mickey anymore. Mm-hmm. And at that time I had just graduated high school. And it was time for me to make a real living for myself. And so I had to say goodbye to Mickey. Although now I wish I would have stayed friends with Mickey for as long as I possibly could have. It was just the most magical and best first job I could ever dream of doing.
I didn't even know this was your first job.
Yeah. That's so cool.
man, how does any job live up to that afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. They don't.
So what is it like for you now since you, I mean, a year and a half doesn't, you know, maybe doesn't sound like that long to some people, but think of how many shows that is and how many times you got to hang out with me. I mean, that's a lot. So now when you go visit the park as a guest, I'm assuming Fantasmic must hold a special place in your heart. How, what does it feel like now being someone to like stand and watch the show?
It's a lot of mixed emotions for me. One is it brings back so many amazing, fun memories. I made so many great friends and met so many amazing people while I was there. And it brings a little sadness too, because I'm no longer a part of that. And it's now just a memory and for me. And that the show has changed makes it a little different too for me. My family laughs because we can't, they say we can't watch Fantasmic without me doing all the moves.
That's amazing though. I love that you still have all of those memorized.
Yes. So, but you know, so it's bittersweet sometimes.
So what do you think of Murphy, the newer dragon? I guess she's not that new anymore, but.
The newest dragon.
Newest dragon, yeah.
The newest. So I have not seen Murphy in person. I know it's been a long time.
Need to.
Yes. But I have seen videos. Mm-hmm. And she looks pretty cool.
You've seen the videos of her behaving, correct? Not the ones where she was throwing a fit? Okay, good.
Yeah. It's kind of an amazing amount of technology that they can shove into that little pit. It's just crazy. And, you know, I just think about, I mean, one of the things that is that makes Fantasmic so magical to me, you were talking about the behind the scenes stuff actually kind of made it even more magical for you. And that's how I feel about Fantasmic. Is the show itself is pretty good, but the fact that during the day you would never know a show was going to happen there. And the fact that like these huge light rigs come out of the ground, you know, Murphy comes out of the stage, you know, the water catches on fire, the Mark Twain and the Columbia come out. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the Disney World Fantasmic, but it is not as good as Disneyland.
Well, it's not original either. Exactly. So.
Right. Right. I will say that one of my favorite parts of the original Fantasmic that is not there anymore was the Peter Pan sequence, because I thought that that was a fantastic use of the ship. And I love pirates, but I just didn't, I don't feel as excited about that segment. I liked it when it was Peter Pan, and I know that they're trying to update things, but they kept all the stuff that matters to me. They kept the cannon blast that the first time I saw it scared the bejesus out of me. And they kept most of the choreography looks identical.
It looks like it's pretty much the same.
And then, of course, that last little gunfire, which I've heard rumors back and forth that it's to signal that like they've gotten past a point or everybody's good or something, and then they can continue to the next segment. But I've also heard that that's just coincidental.
I think that's coincidental.
Yeah, because it's always that last little pop as the lights turn off. So it always seemed like it was like triggering something.
Perfect timing is what it is.
Yeah.
So knowing all of the different, you know, you were talking earlier about listening to different cues in the music. So when you're watching now as a guest, what is that like? Do you kind of have like moments of, oh, you know, like, oh, I have to like, come on, Mickey, we got to go. Or, you know, anything like that. Does it like remind you of like, oh, this noise just happened. So let me see. Yep. There those people are, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes, that's exactly how it is for me. Every time, you know, every little part of the soundtrack, I can envision exactly what's going to happen next and what should be happening and everything. So, absolutely.
What was your favorite part of Fantasmic?
Literally was just gonna ask that question.
That's why we're good.
Actually, there's two parts that are actually really my favorites. One is the monkeys dancing. I love the beat, I love the dance, so that's one of my favorites. And then all the prince and princesses coming out and the barge and hearing that music just flow with each of them as they come out. That's just breathtaking to me. You know, just that's magical as a little girl growing up and seeing the prince and their princess and, you know, and that music. It's just, it's perfect.
Is there something, so you've seen the most recent incarnation, a video of the most recent incarnation. Is there something about the new one that
you like better? You like work? Like maybe not.
I was going to say you didn't like as much.
I'm trying to be positive.
Yeah. Let's go with that. Is there something in the newest version that was an improvement over the original?
An improvement, I would say, is Murphy. Yeah. Murphy was an improvement. Something I like you, I agree. I love Peter Pan and Wendy and that whole with TikTok following. Yes. And so that I wish they would bring back. That's just a classic that, you know, is a Disney classic that needs to be there. So
the thing that I find that the original was more, to me, it was more magical because you had characters like TikTok and you had Flotsam and Jetsam and you had more characters and less projections than the show has now.
Sure.
So, and somehow that just made it more amazing to me was, right. See, was those characters.
I remember a question I was going to ask you earlier now. The first night that you were with Mickey and performed, what was that like?
Oh. My
like
God.
for the general guest, not a preview night, not for advertisement or anything, but for the general day guest.
Oh my gosh. I was a nervous wreck. I was so afraid I was gonna trip, fall. You know, I was afraid that something would happen to Mickey while he was on stage and people would see it. So that it was very nerve-wracking. But once you're on stage with Mickey and you're going through the motions with him, and at the end, after Mickey kills off all the bad imagination things that are occurring, hearing that crowd was just like, oh, like if you're a superstar and you made it and at the concert, there's all these people singing to your song. Like that's how I felt. I was, you know, just amazed by that feeling. And I went home thinking I was like some major superstar. Because Mickey performed, Mickey got, you know, cheered for, and I was so proud of Mickey. So that was amazing.
I have to imagine that was almost every night was that type of reaction.
Oh yes. You don't get tired of that feeling. You don't get tired of hearing people excited and you don't get tired of being friends with Mickey and being able to do that with him every night. It's just nothing you get sick of.
Oh, I can imagine. That's just,
I mean, when I was in the early 2000s, I had the soundtrack, and I remember one time when I worked at the movie theater, I had put it on in the break room, and everybody was taking a break at the time, and I performed the entire show of Fantasmic, dancing and everything, and people still remind me, Laura was there, people still remind me of this to this day, and it's just such a great show. I think, you know, I love World of Color as well, but I still think Fantasmic is better. Fantasmic and Remember Dreams Come True are my two favorite nighttime spectaculars that Disney has ever done.
Yes.
So what was your typical shift like when you were hanging out with Mickey? So we know it was primarily weekends.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, like our call time was, I don't know, like 5 p.m. And then we would have to be there at 5 and we would, we had a black unitard that we would have to be put on and black tennies, black socks. And then we'd have our first performance. Goodness, I don't remember what time it was. I want to say 7:30-ish, somewhere around there. And then we had a second. So we sat around Mark Twain Island and hung out until our second performance. And after our second performance, we all took the barge back backstage and changed and then went home for the night. So
I love that you got like floated out to the island and floated back for the night. That's your little trip.
Sure did.
That's so funny.
We sure did. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I at the time lived in San Bernardino, which is probably with no traffic, about an hour drive to Disneyland. So that was why a year and a half into it, I was like, okay, I really need to, you know, because any money I was making was going towards gas.
Well, and your call time at 5, that's like prime time for traffic, even
absolutely.
On the weekend.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough, though, that I had some friends from the show who lived locally that I could stay and hang out with.
That's cool.
Nice. Very nice.
So did you... So I know that in the past, and even now, sometimes they'll do up to 3 shows a night.
Mm-hmm.
After that many shows in an evening, are you just exhausted at the end of the time? Or is that adrenaline just kind of pushing you through?
It's a couple of things that push you through. One is majority of us are younger. So at that time, I was only 18. So 3 shows a night, I could still go and hang out with friends afterwards. I was still ready to go. You know, today that would like keep me out for a week. But so it was that. It was the adrenaline, because you are performing. You do have lights. You do have fireworks. You have people cheering, and you have so much going on that, you know, you're awake and you're excited and you're having fun. So you're not ready for the night to end. So you weren't ever really tired. The only time you were really tired was during rehearsal time. And that was, you know, why we had our cots with sleeping bags in the back, and we would, you know, sometimes crash out, and the first one to fall asleep would end up with a mustache written on their face or whatever, you know, but it was all just a great time. And you just did it because you loved it. So it wasn't ever a moment of, I'm so exhausted or I'm so tired, I don't want to do this tonight.
That's crazy.
So of course, we know that you were really good friends with Mickey. And you also mentioned you got to be friends with Ka. Was there any other roles that you got to play or any other things that you got to do in the show?
So in the show, I, like I said, I got to be traditional Mickey a couple of times filling in. One time I got to be Sorcerer Mickey, which was super duper fun.
How high is that? That seems like it's very high to be hanging out with
Mickey.
Well,
and it's dark, probably.
And dark.
Yeah. And dark. Uh-huh. But I think you feel really secure. You are tied up in the back.
Good.
And you're not going to go anywhere. And with the dark of the eyes and everything, it's, you don't realize, you can't see really how high you really are. But the only other thing I got to do was when Mickey's Toontown opened up, I got to be one of the 3 little pigs on opening day.
Oh, fun.
And so that was fun.
How fun. I love it. You're like, you get to be the star of the show and now you're going to open a new land. I love it.
The early 90s were a great time for Disneyland. Yeah. You know, they had Fantasmic, and the same year that Fantasmic opened, Mickey's Toontown opened. It was a great time for Disneyland before the dark times of the late 90s and all that.
Did you, so since you got to be part of like the opening crew for Fantasmic, gee, did you get to meet any of the Imagineers or any of the people that created the show?
Absolutely. So Barnett Ritchie actually was there. We had an opening night dinner, and she came and she took pictures with us. So I have a lot of pictures with her. She is one heck of a lady. Just, I mean, to imagine this whole show and to come up with it and be able to get it done was amazing. We had amazing choreographers who showed us every move, every dance step, every, you know, we can take three steps before we fall off the stage, you know, and they were on us. And so we got to know those things before we even went and touched Mark Twain Island. So yeah, it was amazing. And one of the cool things that I got to do was at the time, Michael Jackson ended up renting out Disneyland for the night for Elizabeth Taylor's birthday. Oh. And I got to perform that night in Fantasmic for them. So knowing they were right there in the front watching me perform. And when I heard clapping, I'm like, oh, that's Michael Jackson. It was really cool.
Did you say, okay, now it's your turn? Oh, wow.
That's Michael crazy. Jackson used to rent the park out all the time.
But not everybody gets to perform for Michael Jackson.
Oh, right?
Yeah.
That's incredibly true. He's performed for millions. How many people have performed? Well, mm-hmm. That's crazy to think of it that way.
How long was the process from onboarding to when the first show you were in, like, kind of debuted? What was the time frame? How long did you guys have to rehearse and get all ready?
I think we were probably, if I can remember correctly, don't quote me, but I want to say it was probably a couple of months of rehearsal before we actually went live.
That's not very long for something, although I guess everybody's got little chunks of parts, yeah. So it's not like you're doing the whole show.
Right.
So it sounds like the people that you got to perform with, you guys kind of became a tight-knit little group. Any chance did you keep in contact with any of those people?
I've kept in contact with a couple of those people, not a lot. But I have kept in contact with a couple, and I think we'll always remain friends and have that special bond. We all got at that time, we've got Lev. They look like Letterman jackets, but they've got the big Fantasmic symbol in the back, and in the front it says like original Fantasmic cast member. So we all got those jackets, and I still have mine. And so, no, I think that we have a bond that will never break because that experience, mm-hmm. you know, such a magical experience, and to have that experience with other people. You just kind of become friends and stay that way.
That's amazing. Now, your friend that went with you, she got hired into the electrical parade. How long did she stay there?
She stayed there probably 2 years. I think she stayed about 6 months longer than I did.
Was she a little jealous that you were on this brand new awesome thing and she was on the electrical parade, which had been going for a little while by that point?
No. So I think she really loved her part in the electrical parade. And I think she loved being up close with the audience and to be able to see their faces, where for me, I was not able to see faces like that. So I think she really enjoyed her part, as well as, you know, I was happy for her and she was happy for me. And she's one of those that we've remained friends all these years.
Two good friends did two totally iconic things for Disneyland.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's really amazing when you think about it. So you said that you have a Letterman style type jacket. You have photos with Barnett Ritchie's, obviously, plus all of the memories you've made. Were there any other like souvenirs or any other like keepsakes that you kept because of the show, or things that maybe you were given?
We were given a lot of different things. And over the years, moving and with kids and stuff, I've somehow lost so much of my stuff. I used to have my original cast member letter, and I had like different Christmas cards that, you know, we all gave each other at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I think I even had like the Fantasmic poster once with everyone on my cast had signed it. So, and I do have an 8x10 picture of our cast all on the Mark Twain boat hanging out, you know, and so I do have some things like that. And then, you know, majority of the stuff I wish I would have kept better, you know, in a safe place better. I don't have anymore. From my commercial, I do have, it's one of those little slides.
Oh.
A real tiny slide. So on the day I left, one of our cameramen had gotten that slide of me doing Brave Little Taylor in the commercial.
Oh.
It's just a little picture slide, and he gave that to me. So I still have that.
That's pretty darn cool. That's really yeah. cool.
Of the time that you were there, what was the most memorable thing that you remember from that time?
She's like, all of it.
Well, I'm like, is there anything that like stood out? Or, I mean, obviously performing for Elizabeth Taylor and Michael Jackson's pretty good.
Yeah,
that was really good. There were probably a good 100 of us, I would say, between cast A and cast B. Mm-hmm. There had to be a good, maybe even more than that. I'm probably way off on that count.
How many, so like how many people would perform in like a show? So in your cast B, how many performers was that roughly? I honestly, whenever I watch Fantasmic, it's just like people kind of keep popping up all over the place. So I know that logically, and you've confirmed that you have to be in multiple rows just because, or roles, just because there's just not, the island is just not quite that big. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've always tried to like figure out how many people it takes, you know, performance wise, because of course, then we're not even going to get into the behind the scenes pyrotechnics and like
their tech crew is very large,
and all that kind of stuff, too.
Right. Yeah. Their tech crew is very large. So you figure there's four friends of Mickey. Mm.
Yeah.
And there's each prince and princess. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the monkeys that are going across, those are all different.
So we would be possibly like 40 to 50 people.
Right, wow. Right. That would be my guess.
Wow.
I wish I knew that stuff better. Yeah.
That's okay. It's been
you
a long time.
You weren't taking attendance. It's okay.
Well, and things like the monkeys and stuff, they go and get changed and they end up on the Mark Twain at the end, don't they?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because there's a bunch of characters in the Mark Twain that are not in the show.
Right,
right,
yeah.
So.
Right.
Like Buzz and Woody.
Yep. Well, there. Wouldn't have been when she was there because was later.
That's true. That, you know, this is side note. The other thing I always find amazing is Steamboat Willie like popping up on top of
that's
Mark
true.
Twain.
Right?
He's not there, mm-hmm. not there, and then poof, there he is.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about that, Mickey. There's a lot of Mickeys in the show.
That's one of the Mickeys that, like, as far as like quickly like appearing somewhere, I cannot like. There's a way that this
I've seen it once.
Does it. But mm-hmm. I still cannot wrap my brain around how that happens. Like, that's so magical to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing how the queen and the old hag do their little spin thing now still is just like.
Man, I would what I wouldn't like pay crazy. To have like a behind the scenes, just watch it all, learn all the little tricks.
Wait, pause the show. Can you do that again? How did you do that?
No, but I mean, during like, people must rehearse, obviously, when you get new cast and everything like that. So I'm sure that this is not the case. But is there anybody that you know of that is still doing Fantasmic that was doing Fantasmic when
from
you were
the
there?
Beginning?
I mean, there might be a tech person or something.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
Because that'd be crazy.
All left. That would be really crazy. And I've wondered, like, if the choreographers are still there because they're still having to do new rehearsals with new people. So I don't know. I don't know if they're still there.
Hmm.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So Tag had asked you earlier about what it was like to step out on stage with Mickey for your first performance in front of an audience. Can you tell us what that same experience was for your final performance with Mickey?
Ooh, that was a tearjerker. And I don't think at the time I realized what a sad day that was going to be for me. And a sad moment when I did my very last performance for the night. But I remember just going off stage and going back into the little hut and just bawling my eyes out and being like, I can't believe this time is over. Like, did I make the right decision? Did I really make the right decision? I knew, you know, it had to come to an end eventually. Mm-hmm. But that was really a tough pill to swallow and walk away from.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's like it's like the opposite, right? Because it's, you know, you've got all this adrenaline and all this energy and also knowing that it's the last time that you're going to be able to experience it. That's got to be such a very crazy mix of emotions.
I have to imagine that it's so hard when you've done something so many times that like this is the last, like your brain, at least for me, the times I've left jobs and stuff, it's always been really weird because my brain doesn't quite sink in that like that's the last time I'm doing this.
Well, and this was like you and your crew, your team creating and like bringing the show to life and like bringing it to the crowd, you know, so I feel like that's got to be even more, you know, more of an emotional thing to end, I guess.
Yes. And it was probably about 2 years after that, like I was really, really missing it.
Yeah.
And so I went back. They had a small audition, and I had told them ahead of time, you know, hey, if something comes up, let me know. A couple months went by and they finally called me and said, hey, come in, audition for, it was one of the monkey parts, the dance bar. And I had not danced in so long, and I was so awkward and so rusty, and I didn't get the part.
Yeah.
And I was crushed even more. Like, you know, wow, like I can't even get this part now, you know?
So, 2 years ago, I was friends with Mickey. Don't you know who I am?
Yeah. Do you not know who I am? Mickey and I'd slay the dragon nightly.
But they had like one part open, someone had left, and they were just going to do a quick, you know, audition to fill this one part. And I didn't get it. And I wished I hadn't gone back to do that all those years later, because that just like, oh, you know, broke my heart.
Well, speaking of going back to Disneyland, if you could work at Disneyland again, what would you do? Sky's the limit. It can be a made-up job. It can be a real job.
You don't even have to audition this time.
Yeah. If you could just get any job.
I would go back and be Belle on the show.
Oh.
She was so magical to me. And Belle was friends with my friend Stephanie Leal at the time. And Stephanie was just beautiful to me. I thought she was like one of the most prettiest girls I'd ever seen. And then seeing her with Belle was just like, I felt like a little kid again, looking at her and being so in awe.
Yeah.
And so that was always one of my favorite characters in the show. So I would jump on the opportunity to do that.
She's got such a like beautiful like gown.
I love her gown.
Yes.
And you, I don't know if you got to see this in the updated video that you saw, but the floats now, how they light the floats when those characters' songs go is just.
Yeah, they go from that blue to the lit up flowers and,
like,
and stuff.
Kind of like cascades over the whole barge. It's gorgeous.
They've done little upgrades over time that have, like, that's one of the upgrades that I think is just amazing.
So I have a second question to that. If Disney were to call you and say, hey, we need someone to come hang out with Mickey.
Hi there.
I tell you, Mickey is like, that's probably one of the best people to or characters to be friends with in that show. Because you're either A, shooting like fireworks out of your hands, or you're like making the jets do their thing and like
pointing and fireworks.
At stuff and, you know. Or you're slaying the dragon, like, or you're popping up out of nowhere. Like, he's just magical in that show. There's so much magic.
Was there anything that you brought to Mickey that is something that, like, you helped create that character that was used, I guess?
So when Mickey runs and is starting to, you know, fear and go behind the rock and shake. And then he reappears and he shakes his knees really, really hard. That was something I did. And so, and I noticed that in the Mickeys now that he is actually shaking his knees really hard. So I'm like, oh.
That's amazing. Like that's something that you just did, like something that you just brought to your performance, continued on. That's so cool.
It is cool.
Because when they are doing rehearsals, they're like, you know, okay, now you're afraid of Mickey and you're shivering and shaking. And even though it's like kind of your hands that do that, for me, it was also my knees. My knees would be, you know, shaking. And so, so that's just kind of what I did. And I noticed that it kind of has carried on.
That's cool. I thought she was going to say the fact that you carried the sword with both hands because it was so heavy, but like, this is the only way I can do it. Now everybody does it that way. That is a giant sword. Well, though. You know how much that thing weighs?
The first one was like wood. And it had the pyrotechnic string out of it. And it would just kind of light up. And then they got it to where it shot out fireworks. But then it eventually got lighter as it progressed. So...
the original one was solid.
Well, the one when they brought Murphy out is now like connected to Murphy. Because if you look, when he jabs at it, there's like a bolt that like goes up the string or whatever that's connecting it to look like it's actually hitting him. So that has to add some weight because you've got all that that you're kind of holding up.
That string, yeah.
I love with Murphy some of the stuff that like I love that he tilts his head back and like stuff explodes from like out of his neck. And then he does that like roar and like one last gasp of fire.
Yeah.
So right. Cool.
I can't wait for you to see Murphy in person.
Oh yeah.
Because she's just like larger than life. I can't imagine being that Mickey
close, yeah.
Right next to this giant dragon.
Well, she moves around too. She shifts her weight
her
back
head
and
comes,
forth.
Like, right down almost right next to him and all this stuff is
right.
Just,
Yeah, because I think the original one, wasn't it kind of like a crane with a head on it?
It was the big head, yes. And it would, you know, move around like this, and then his head would come real close to me. But it was like a crane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
the wings were just like a big tapestry thing that people were like pulling right. back and forth, right?
Really?
No, people weren't pulling. It was just that it was
just
free
billowing.
Flowing.
Oh.
So,
Yeah, because I remember looking back at it. It was still really cool at the time. But looking back at it, I'm like, that looks so janky by today's standards.
That's what Walt Disney World still has that one. They do not have a...
That's true.
Oh, wow.
...giant animatronic.
But they also never had the Peter Pan thing. They had a segment from Pocahontas. They have, like, the mountain that they all, like, dance around and stuff.
Uh-oh.
And they were the first ones to use the water technology like they have at World of Color, because when Mickey attacks the dragon, water would come up and it would do this weird like popping thing. So it would spray up, and then I don't know how they do it, but it would kind of like explode in water. So all these jets were coming up, and at different levels, it would look like the water was like exploding at the dragon.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. So they do a little bit of that now. Disneyland Paris did that with their big 20th anniversary show a few years ago.
Fantasmic?
No.
Oh.
No, Disneyland Paris is awesome because they have fireworks and the fountains and projections in front of their castle because they have the moat. And so they have jets and projection screens like Fantasmic does. And they do fireworks off of it. And they do projections now just like, you know, like Disneyland and everybody else does. I was there for their 20th anniversary and that was an amazing show.
Yeah.
I do know that some of the characters in my show went on to Tokyo Disney.
Oh.
When Tokyo Disney went out and they, you know, performed out there. And
wow.
So that some of them traveled and did some, stayed with Disney for quite some time.
Think of that. You could have been Mickey on another continent.
Right?
That's crazy. That's really crazy.
That would have been fun.
Well, thank you so much for spending some of your evening with us, Vanessa, and talking about one of our favorite things about Disneyland. I'm sure there are lots of people listening that also think it's their favorite things, or that it is their favorite thing. So thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you, guys. I had so much fun reliving those moments with you, and I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer James to get the answers to this week's trivia. I feel pretty good this week, but I'm sure James is about to douse our enthusiasm.
No, you should feel pretty good about this week. So, not perfect, but pretty good. Our first question came from listener Liberty M, also a community manager on our Discord chat. Which Disneyland attraction opened first, the Matterhorn bobsleds or It's a Small World? She even wanted to give you bonus points for the exact year, but I knew you'd get that one too easy, so no bonus points. But it was indeed the Matterhorn bobsleds in 1959.
Yay!
Nice.
Our second question from listener Om D. In the Haunted Mansion, at least pre-pandemic, there are 5 singing busts in the graveyard scene. 2 have significant differences from the rest. What are these differences? I would have asked which busts have them, but I felt like it was hard enough with what the differences were. Teresa, you should have stuck with your gut. Indeed, the second bust is broken at the neck and has fallen off. You both got that one. And the third one is wearing a bowler hat. Ah, so close, Teresa. So close. Our third question from listener Jill M. on It's a Small World. What shape are the pendulums of the cuckoo clocks in Switzerland? Yeah, Teresa, good try with the cheese. I was totally pulling for someone to guess a plus sign like their flag, but that would have also been wrong. You just need to have a little love. It's hearts.
Oh. Goats would have been fun, too.
Goats? You said goats?
Yeah.
Because why
like
not?
Like Kate was for her bounding thing, like the dynamite goat. Yeah.
Mm. And our last one, a bit of an opinion question. Which attraction at the resort do you get the wettest on? It's an opinion question, so you both get points. Yay. Splash Mountain would have been my pick. And I actually wrote in my sheet, except for that one time y'all rode Grizzly River Run.
We have the expert, though. Ace worked that attraction, and he said that was way wetter.
We're going to have to research this for science.
Yeah.
Like, ride it a bunch of times?
Yep.
So we have to add, on our upcoming trip, we actually do have to do 5 days, because one day is just going to be riding the ride over and over.
It's going to be a good time, so... What do you think? Which attraction do you get wetter on, or are we missing something else? Who knows? That drop in pirates can be pretty deadly. Obviously, a good week of trivia. They did pretty well, but we didn't get a perfect score out of them, so a good mix of questions. You have any ideas for trivia? You can send me and producer Vern an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Oh, just 10 more, well, 9 more by the time this episode comes out days. Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic. Then we get to return to go out and enjoy the parks.
I get to say it, too, because we flip-flop it every week. Like, you're like,
oh, it will be
it.
That time, won't it? Wow. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.